Successful people learn how to make their mind work for them. I'm David Nagel, and this is the Successful Mind Podcast.
Hello, everybody. This is David Nagel, and welcome to What's the Truth. Today, our guest is Sherry. Hi, Sherry. Welcome to the show.
Hi, David. Thanks so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
My pleasure. Thanks for participating. We want to make this a rich experience for you. So why don't you start off by telling me a little bit about you and the problem that you're having, and we'll see what we can do to help you.
So I own a law firm, and I have been working on trying to get this to a certain level since October of 2017. And in my mind, I have a vision for the firm and a vision for my life as well, with the ultimate vision being to do philanthropic work. And so there is this very strong desire that keeps growing to level the business to a place where I can make these things happen. I heard you and Brandon talking in a podcast about a parent taking a child for a walk past the ice cream store.
Yeah.
But the parent says, no, you can't go in there. And it's sort of, I sort of feel both personally and professionally that I'm the kid with the parent that can see the ice cream in the store. And that glass window is the block. And you know that you can go in, but you're not quite sure how to get in there.
Right.
And so I went to Art of Success last year, and I'll be coming again in the spring. And you had talked about, you know, what are you resisting? And that question's been resonating me for a while, just trying to figure it out. Where's the block? What am I resisting? Why can't I get to the level where I want to go? And I'm having a lot of trouble figuring it out. And so that's why I wanted to come on the show and try to figure out how to get past that blind spot,
right,
figure out what the truth is, and really make that, you know, to use Price Pritchett's analogy, that quantum leap to U squared, to the
right,
best version of myself.
Yeah. So the idea is that whenever we have a block, it's generally based in a fear, whether it's a conscious or a subconscious fear. But the interesting thing about fears, most fears are not rational. We're only born with two fears, the fear of falling and the fear of loud noises. Every other fear is either learned or taught to us. So learned would be experientially. You had experiences, and then the meaning that you gave them as you internalized them was fear, because you felt fear. Nobody helped you create another meaning around it. Or it was a fear that somebody taught you, like a repetition. Your mom or your dad or some other authority figure when you were a child really kind of projected their fears about specific things in life onto you. We generally take those on ourselves as kids as part of our natural agreement to be loved and appreciated by our parents. So we have a tendency, especially before the age of 7, when we don't really have a conscious mind engaged in a relationship, we just take everything in that they say is truth. So there's a lot of things that we end up being programmed with that we don't even know until specific instances in our life show that we're behaving in a way that is either not characteristic with who we think we are or the direction that we want to go in life, and we get stuck and we don't know how to turn it around. So I read your intake form. You have a lot of interesting information on here. You have some personal challenges in your life with your husband. Is that correct?
Well, my husband had part of his brain removed. And so he is, that brain surgery occurred when we were fairly far on into the relationship, but not quite married. And so now that he's had the brain surgery to take care of the epilepsy, he's completely fine.
Oh.
My husband is actually really the biggest supporter in all of this, the champion who's like, you can do this, you can do this, you can do this. But I think the biggest fear and it almost feels like it stems from my childhood, yeah, is the fear of failing my family. And I was homeless as a child. I didn't have a great upbringing, you know, all these different things. And so it's really, really important to me, not only to make the business go for my family, because I want to be the best version of myself, but I would like to get to a position where, you know, I'm helping others who were in the same sorts of situations that I was in when I was a kid.
So you kind of have a fear that you'll replicate that with your family. You don't, and you don't want to.
It's a huge fear of mine. And even though rationally, I know that's not the thing that's going to happen, it's a really difficult thing to get past. And so, for example, as a business owner, you know, if I go through a cash crunch in my business, that's something that will completely send me over the edge. And, you know, all these fears about, you know, well, what if I'm homeless, and what if my kids are homeless, and what if I can't feed my family? And, you know, the things that you know from a rational place are like, it's not going to happen. But it almost feels at times like being a helpless child again.
Your subconscious mind is not rational. It's the emotional mind. The conscious mind, which is the thinking mind, tries to think rationally. So you have, you know, this duality going on inside of yourself where the conscious mind is saying, go do this. But the subconscious mind is really very much acting like a child emotionally. But the fears are very real when the person is experiencing them. What decisions are you not making to move forward the way that you want to because of the fears? Are they pretty much around money?
I think most of it comes up around money, or, you know, things in my business that I know I need to do that will be on the to-do list, but then other things get in the way of actually accomplishing that. And then I'll say, well, I'll do this tomorrow. And you had a podcast recently where you talked about when you tell yourself you're going to do something and then you don't do it, that you start creating all these sorts of issues because you teach yourself that you can't trust yourself. And for me, both in my business and personally, if I tell somebody I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. I'm a woman of my word. And so that podcast had really resonated with me because I thought, if I'm going to keep my promise to my clients and I'm going to keep my promise to my family and my kids, and people know that they can rely on me for that, then why am I not doing the same for myself personally?
Because you keep promises to other people, but not yourself.
So, you know, that's part of the block that I want to get around. You know, I don't want to keep doing, I'm not going to talk about what I don't want. I want to do the things that I know will take me to that next.
I get it. I totally get it. So just play with me here. Let me take you somewhere and see if this helps. What caused you to be homeless when you were a child? What were the circumstances?
So my parents around the age of 7 started having a lot of issues in their divorce. And so my father was not around much. So I very much became the caretaker for my mom. And over the years, they finally got to the point when around 16, they finally divorced. My mother and I moved away. My mother really didn't have any sort of support system, and the things that she thought were going to work did not work. And so we found ourselves basically living in a dilapidated motel with creepy crawlies and all sorts of things, and then trying to work our way out of that. And so when I was 16, I had 3 jobs. And eventually we worked our, and I had actually, during that period, I had also dropped out of high school because I had had my life threatened in an inner city school. So there's all this turmoil sort of going around. And then when I got back to high school, I had a high school counselor said, you will never do anything. And it made me really mad. And I said, you watch me. I'm going to go. And from there, I managed to get into an Ivy League school. I managed to go to law school. I did all these great things. And then I got out and it was like, okay, you know, now all that sort of turmoil has passed, but I settled into things that were just comfortable and I wasn't doing anything to move myself forward personally and professionally. But then in the meantime, there's sort of that rising fire inside that's like, you're still not where you're supposed to be. There's something else you're supposed to be doing. And I know that, but it's like, man, I want to get, the past is the past. I can't do anything about that. And I'm grateful for those experiences in that it formed me into who I am today. And I wouldn't change that. But by the same token, I want to move forward in a big way so that I can be an example, not only for, I have two daughters, a 9-year-old and a 3-year-old, and show them that it doesn't matter what you're going through, that you can keep leveling up, but also show up in a way for others who might find themselves in that same situation.
So when you were a kid, your role became your caretaker of your mother.
Correct.
And why were you the caretaker for your mother?
There wasn't anybody else, and she was fairly helpless. And, you know, her thing was, well, I always thought you wanted to do that. And it was like, well, no, it was sort of expected that I do that.
Why was she so helpless?
I don't think my mother generationally, you always talk about generations and the beliefs, you know, of the parents and their parents. And I don't think my mother was ever really taught how to survive on her own. She always had somebody there being a safety net for her. So whether it was her parents and then her, you know, her mother died and then it became my father and then my father left. And then it became, well, my daughter is the only person I have. And it's just sort of this her and I against the world.
And your dad just abandoned the two of you?
Like, just abandoned us, yes.
Just abandoned you. Okay. So when you're a little kid and you take on a role like this, the reason that we take it on is for safety. We're trying, when you know, our subconscious mind is very, very aware that for a significant period of time in our childhood, the reality of us staying alive is to be dependent upon our parents. In a healthy relationship between child and parents, that transfer of power is supposed to take period over a number of years. And through a number of levels of competency that a kid develops to turn into an adult. And then they're supposed to realize at some point that I'm responsible for myself. I can verify that I can take care of myself by the competencies and the confidences that I have that my parents helped me develop as a child. And now I'm a grown person and I can do that. When there's a major dysfunction, when there's a real gap in that upbringing for a child, what they do is the child figures out of survival, who do I need to be in order to feel safe and certain inside? So you were like, I need to take care of my mother. Dad's gone. We're living in a really shitty place. I have to work 3 jobs. This is how I stay certain. This is how I stay safe. And you also have the role of caretaking, okay? So look at how that has played over into your adult life. Who are you the caretaker for in your adult life?
Still very much, it's my mom. She's still alive. And the older she gets and the more physical infirmities she has, there really isn't anybody else. And so, you know, she, this is where, you know, it's like, well, what do you do when you have a relationship that, you know, if you don't continue that person's going to suffer because of the lack of your presence, you know, and then my kids, obviously. And so, you know, what I want to do is not repeat that pattern. I want to show up in the best possible way so that the relationship with the kids is functional.
Right. But you are repeating the pattern. You're repeating the pattern in the sense you're not homeless. That's not the pattern I'm talking about. It's the caretaker pattern. Mm-hmm. So you've linked up in your mind, if I work really hard, then basically I can take care of everybody. Mm. However, going past that was not something that you were really programmed to do, because it was basically, how do we survive the situation that we're in when I'm a child? The other question I would ask you is, what did your mom put in your mind when it came to, like, you living your dream, going beyond just surviving the situation? And how is she holding you back? How is that relationship literally holding you back now as an adult?
You had a podcast on this recently where you talked about basically whose goals are you living?
Right.
And that podcast really resonated with me because I thought, you know, for a long time, my mother, when I went to law school, was very much like, you need to go to law school. You need to be a success. You need to be able to take care of yourself. And I don't think that I ever really had the permission to think beyond you're going to law school.
Yep.
And so now I'm in the firm and I love my firm. I love helping other people. I believe that I'm here to help other people. But when you talk about whose goals and whose visions are you living, when I truly think about that, it's not clear to me. It's, you know, it's like a fuzzy magic eight ball, if you will. You know, like how do you see what that's supposed to be to get to the level where you're going to get, where you want to get, where that desire is building?
If you ask yourself this question, really think, if you didn't have to be concerned about your mother at all, about her physical welfare or what she thinks of you, if you had plenty of money, where, in other words, money being a resource, it was unlimited for you, that you could do whatever you wanted to do, and you didn't have to worry about what anybody else thought about your choice, what would you do different than you're doing now?
You know, David, this is something that I've really struggled with because I don't know the answer to that question. I was even trying to think, okay, you know, when I was a kid, what was the thing that particularly spoke to me? And I don't really remember much of my childhood at all.
Right.
I basically remember from, you know, when I started college on. So it goes back to part of this block about, you know, who am I supposed to be? And not so much, you know, looking for a purpose. I'm not sure that we ever truly know that. But just figuring out, like, what does that look like? And I don't know.
Well, part of what you said was to build a multi-million dollar law firm.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So if you're not there yet, that's one thing. But what did you also tell me at the beginning of the show that you wanted to do?
I would love to do philanthropic work.
There you go. But philanthropic work doesn't pay you anything. You pay it.
Right.
Right? So the first step to opening the door, by the way, I disagree with you. I think we do know our purpose when we're in it. It feels right in our heart. We feel fulfilled on the inside. We have a passion and a love for it. There's no question in our mind that this is what we're supposed to be doing. When we have a question in our mind, is this what I'm really supposed to be doing? At some point, we're disconnected from it. We're probably doing it for another reason. However, I think everything links up together to help us, like, it's trying to find the center of town. It doesn't matter which way you approach it. The center is the center. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing with a person's purpose. It doesn't matter which way you approach it from, and it doesn't matter what situation any person can find them in. The thing that's in front of them that they're not doing is what the universe is trying to say, follow this road, it'll lead you to your purpose. The fact that you want a multi-million dollar business is one of the things that you need in order to do philanthropic work. So if we start there, where you are right now, what needs to change so that you can build a multi-million dollar firm where you can begin to walk away from it where somebody else is running it and you can start to do the philanthropic work that you want to do?
You know, a big part of that is marketing, which always feels like I don't have quite enough time for. And that started to change because I'm bringing in people to help, which is something that I've not had for a long time.
That's great.
So with that piece, this first quarter of the year is the first time in 3 years where I've been able to say, okay, I'm on this track. I know where the track is going and it feels like it's leading me to the place where it's supposed to be.
Perfect.
But there are other pieces that I need to put into play with that. And part of my problem is I'm just impatient. And this stuff doesn't happen overnight. And, you know, it's like you don't just wake up and one day and say, oh, in 24 hours, I built a multi-million dollar business. That I'm realistic to that. But I also know everything just feels almost like molasses. It's like, okay, I'm moving. I can see the light. We're moving toward it. But why isn't this going faster?
Okay. So the question is, number one, I agree. You do have to have a level of patience. Okay. But you could probably build it faster than you think. How much are you currently earning?
It depends on whether the business is in a cash crunch. And this,
gross. You know,
this
just tell me what your gross. Do you feel comfortable enough to say what your gross is? Is that okay?
Right now it's under six figures. I am making less than what I was making when I got out of law school as a new associate. But that's part of building the business. It's enough to sustain. But, you know, when you talk about looking at an environment and what you're surrounded with, you know, I'm not flying first class to events, and so I keep, you know, I want part of the frustration for me now in a business is, you know, when I look at the things that I should have done and didn't do and realize this is what I need to fix, and I'm on the track for fixing, but you're still sort of in this environment where it's like, well, holy cow, you know, I made just enough to cover my overhead, you know, and to pay myself something, and not be homeless, you know, but it's not.
The math is wrong. The math is wrong. You're not, if you're just making it, you're not charging enough. And if you're not charging enough, it's probably because you think nobody will buy at a higher price. So the math is wrong. You can be over seven figures in the next year to 18 months without a question. I've helped more lawyers do this than I can shake a stick at. And they've been in the same situation that you are. So here's the biggest problems that I see. One, you have to learn to let go of control. You already know how to build a business. I'm confident just by talking to you that you're more intelligent enough to build this, to build the company. You know what you need, but you also are very weary of letting go of control in your life because control is what saved you as a child. So you have to hire intelligently. You have to determine who do I need? And money is never an issue when hiring. I'll get to that in a minute because I always hear, I don't have enough money to pay this person. That's not necessary either. You can have people that really resonate with your dream and they understand that there's a cash crunch that you have to go through and they're willing to go through it with you with the promise of a future return later on. I see companies do this all the time. I did it when I first started out. It's all about finding the right people. So letting go of control, making a decision that your real power is your ability to choose. And you know you're going to make mistakes. You didn't get this far without making mistakes. You know you made mistakes. So you have the ability to make a mistake, learn from it quickly, and then make a new choice, right? Mm-hmm. Every business that is built, one of the things that allows them to scale fast is their ability to learn from their mistakes quickly, make a new choice, and continue to move forward. They don't internalize it. They don't build it. They don't personalize it to themselves. In other words, like I'm a stupid idiot, I made a mistake, or they don't get in the fear of what's going to go wrong if I make a mistake. They change it quickly and move forward. The next thing is that you've got to charge correctly in order to hit the goals. If you don't adjust your prices based on your vision of where you want to go for yourself and for the company, you will not make enough money to cover the expenses that you need in order to do it. So your math has to be right all the way from the employees that you need to hire to what you pay yourself, to what you need for operating expenses for the company. Because even though it is one of the most common reasons why a person goes out of business, that they don't have enough money to continue, especially if a company bootstrapped going into it to begin with, I've never bought into the fact that it's the determining factor why a person would go out of business, because they have the ability to change it. But the piece that they don't understand is that personal growth is behind the key to that change. That's saying, I'm worth more, my service is worth more, my company is worth more, and you, whoever, Mr. or Mrs. Client, you're worth more by spending that much money on yourself for our services. That client is out there. It's out there for every company. You have to get good at communicating that to the client, and then you have to have the service people to be able to deal with the client. And I promise you, 12 to 18 months, you'll be over seven figures.
So you hit on something really important that when I was spending some time thinking about this was the self-esteem portion.
Yeah.
and sort of this feeling of never being enough. And that message being unfortunately repeated by, you know, someone that I'm close to. And so, you know, part of what I've done with that person, because I can't eliminate contact completely, is just limited the contact. And you had something in a podcast where you said you were at dinner with somebody and they said, I'm not willing now, nor am I willing ever to have this conversation, and right. just shutting it down.
Yep.
And so I've worked on that piece, on fixing that piece. But when you've had a message built into you for so long that you're not enough, how do you overcome that programming to tie into this feeling that when you're talking to the clients that it's not, oh, well, you know, just little old me and maybe I'm not worth that much. And how do you rewrite that?
Do you know intellectually that you're worth that much?
Yes.
Okay, good. That's good. That's a good first start. Because if you're not, then it's about how do I build you up intellectually to believe that, okay? Mm-hmm. The next thing is that you got to draw a line in the sand with your life. This is it, right here. I am not going to tolerate that idea operating inside me that I'm not enough anymore. So the way a child is programmed with the idea that they're not enough is one of two ways or a combination of both. One, they're told it over and over and over again. But a child has nothing inside of them that says that's true or not true. So there's no comparison in their mind. They can't evaluate the proposition that is being told to them. So they just accept it. And then you have the quality of their life, how they were treated, what kind of environment they were raised in. Did that support that or not? For years, it did. You got it on both. But intellectually, you know it's different. So now you have to do two things. Number one, you can never allow your internal voice or your mouth to say those words again. Like you have to say, this is it. I'm never saying that again. What you're going to repeat in your head and out of your mouth is, I am absolutely worth blank, whatever it is that you determine that you say your worth is. Okay. Mm-hmm. But it needs to be specific so your subconscious mind will understand it, right? I am worth a multimillion dollar company. I am worth an amazing loving relationship. I am worth high-end clients. I am worth people paying me at this dollar amount. I am worth charging this amount. I am worth the philanthropic work that I want to do. From this point forward, you only confirm what it is that you want. Secondly, your behavior must match the conviction that's coming out of your mouth. That means you need to make decisions from a place of what you're worth, and not what your fear suggests is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
If you will do those two things, you'll change. You'll do the quantum leap, like Price Pritchett said, because you'll be in integrity with the truth. Right now, you're operating from the truth of what you want, but you're also operating from the fear of what you don't want. Those two things get crossed energetically. It affects you behaviorally in your business, and then you just stay where you are. That's how you change it. You change those two things. Your mouth, the conversation in your head, and every action and decision that you make must insist that that's the direction you're going in. Now, when will it change internally where you don't have to think about it anymore? The more you get the results that indicate that behavior, you rewire yourself both intellectually, emotionally, and through your behavior, then you'll start to believe it. But you have to get those three pieces in alignment. That's why if you tolerate going backwards, like when I said, when you break the trust with yourself, any time you allow yourself to the conversation in your health to, in your head to doubt your self-worth, or the words coming out of your mouth, or the decisions in your behavior, you reinforce the old pattern. And that's what you want to break. So it really is playing hardball with yourself at this point, going, yep, I'm ready to do this on all three levels, and I am not looking back. I'm only looking forward, and I won't tolerate anybody in my life that is going to suggest that I'm not worth it. So I'm glad that you drew that boundary with whoever it is that you need to draw it with, and continue to do so.
Mm-hmm. So the thoughts are easy. So I tell my daughter, you know, plant flowers, don't throw trash in, yep, in your brain. But what about the behavior? How do you...
It's pre-decision. Change? It's pre-decision. You make sure that every area of your life is a reflection. You set it up as a reflection for the self-worth that you want. So it's about how you treat yourself. It's about how you treat your home, you treat your office environment, how you treat other people. And then it goes all the way down to the decisions that you make. You only make decisions that are in alignment with the goal and the vision that you're setting for yourself. That means you can no longer make a decision based on fear or lack.
Okay.
So you have to, so if you remember when I taught the law of polarity, right?
Yes.
The law of polarity is your new truth. You have to hold that in front of you all the time so that you don't get caught in making decisions based off just the facts and the statistics that you have in front of you, but you understand that the other thing that you want that you may not be experiencing is already here, but I need to make a decision to get me from here to the thing that I can't see. One way to do that is I raise my prices. Now I'm going to raise my prices. Now I'm going to confidently like ask myself 500 times before I ask another person, 10 times more than that price. So let's say you raise your prices to 1,000. I don't know what your prices are, but let's just say we're going to say that for just for an example. I'm going to raise my prices to $1,000 an hour. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to internally say to myself, I need you to buy this contract at $5,000 an hour. Okay. So you increase it way more, way beyond anything that you would do. Do that like 500 times in your head. Your subconscious mind cannot tell the difference between what is imagined and what is real. So it starts to get used to you asking the number for 5,000, 5,000, 5,000, 5,000. When you ask for 1,000, it'll seem like nothing. There won't be an energetic shift in you is what I'm trying to say, right? Because typically what happens is the person raises their price. They get into a sales conversation or a negotiation conversation. When they go to ask for the amount that they want, their energy shrinks. They then send a double binding message to the person that they're either negotiating with or whoever's buying from them. And the person picks up on it and they say no. It causes a shake in their confidence. But if you do it the way that I just taught you, then that won't happen. And you will get the amount that you want and you won't see a dip in your income either because you don't have to go through all these people telling you no at that price until you reinforce it in yourself to attract a higher client. You'll do it right from the get-go, but you've got to do the 500 times first, okay? And you have to do it in a short order, like do it over a weekend. Take a weekend and just be like, I'm going to just keep repeating this over and over again. Go 10 times, 100 times more than what you're actually charging, what you raise your price to, and then your mind will accept it much easier.
Okay. That's really great. Thank you.
You're very welcome. I guarantee you, if you do exactly what I told you, and you'll get the recording of this as soon as we put it out, you can watch it as many times as you want. If you do this, a year to 18 months, you'll be over a million. Just make sure your math is correct, right? So the amount of people that you need to service at that price that you can actually do based on the way that your law firm is right now, and it will totally happen.
Yes. And, you know, and that's something that I'm constantly working on is, you know, how many people does it take in the factory to produce this thing? And what does that cost look like? And so that's something that is in constant refinement to get there. But I think my biggest issue is just projecting, even though intellectually I know what I'm charging. My hourly rate is $350 an hour. Even though intellectually I know, hey, I am worth that. You know, and I turn people away when they're not wanting to pay that. And exactly. I'll just tell them, I'm not your person for that. There are people for that. But it's I find that it's taking a lot to get over that message in the mind that like
it only is because you allow the conversation to happen in your head.
Okay.
You're allowing your mind to then run into doubt every time you come across something that indicates you can't do it, you won't do it, they won't buy. Anything that creates doubt in your mind, you allow yourself to engage in the conversation. You got to say, get the fuck out of my head. Mm-hmm. Get out of my head. I am not tolerating you. Right? That is your mother in your head. That's whoever else, that's the teacher in your head. Remember you were like, watch me when the teacher told you that? You right. need to say the same thing to that voice. Fuck off. Watch right. me. I'm going to do this, damn it. Your energy needs to come up and you need to be determined. This is the thing that most people are not willing to do to break the relationship with their undeveloped self. That all it wants to do is stay small and the same, right? You have to break that relationship. It's time to say goodbye to that little girl Mm-hmm. Tell her she's going to be safe. Let her go. And you go out there and you take charge of your own life and you get where you want to go.
Yes. Thank you. And the podcast you had too on, you know, safety is just sort of an illusion that's, that was really helpful too. And so taking these steps to move forward, I think you're fantastic.
Awesome. Great. Do it. And then let me know if we can help in any way. And then when you get there, we'll have you back on the show.
I'm coming in March. I'm doing the virtual coaching in March.
Okay.
And then I will be at Art of Success in Atlanta. So my commitment is to really getting to this next level and just continuing to listen to the podcast, to really just soak it all in.
Good.
And to surround myself with that, with just positivity and knowing that this is here and I can do it. And, you know, quite frankly, the more I listen to you, the more I feel like that fire rise and like, you know, you can do this. You're not different from anybody. You know, you're just like everybody. You can do this, you know, but I'm going to make the decision to get where I want to go. And I'm going to put the pieces in place that are going to get me there.
Awesome. When you charge those prices, you see me sitting right next to you. Like I'm sitting there right with you when you charge. Believe in my belief that you can do it.
You know, it's really funny that you say that, David, because I actually do that when I start to, because you mentioned that at Art of Success. And I even repeat this to my daughter, you know, when she's like, oh, I can't, or, oh, this is so hard. I'm like, I believe in you, believe in my belief. So you are on my shoulder more than you know.
Awesome.
And I'm so grateful for you and the work that you're doing. And the message is really important.
Fantastic. Okay, let me just give a message to our listeners. If you enjoyed this episode of What's the Truth and you'd like the opportunity to be featured on our future podcast, text TRUTH, T-R-U-T-H, TRUTH, to 469-447-7775. I want to thank you very much for being on the show. I hope it was a benefit to you. I can't wait to see where you're going.
Absolutely. Thank you, David. I appreciate your time.
You're welcome. Talk to you soon.
All righty. Bye-bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Successful Mind Podcast. And if you like what you heard and you want to know more, go to davidnagel.com/freestuff.